This episode of the Energy Stoners Cafe is sponsored by the Black Arts Matter Network, blackartsmatter.net. Hi, everybody. I had the privilege of interviewing L.A. Soul, Lawrence Anthony. He's with the Temptations Tribute Band. He's performing with them currently. We had some technical difficulties with the audio in the original show, and I'm so glad to be able to present this interview with you today. He had some very interesting things to say. L.A. Soul. Welcome to the Energy Stoners Cafe. My name is Toni Quest, and I'm really happy that you're here. I like to interview the most interesting people I can find on the planet. So grab a cup of coffee, sit down, relax, and listen. You're going to find that these guests are so intriguing, you'll wonder why you didn't know about them before. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Energy Stoners Cafe. As you know, every week, I always get the best guests I can find on the planet just to entertain you and to inform you. Well, tonight we have a wonderful guest. His name is Lawrence Anthony, and he's a singer, but he was a singer for the Persuasions, people that are into soul and R&B music. And he was also a singer for the 60s tribute band for the Temptations. He's got a voice like no other. Let's talk to him because I find his voice to be really lovely and almost hypnotic. Okay. Lawrence Anthony, welcome to the show.
Thank you so very much, Tony. I really do appreciate the high accolades. Appreciated. I don't know if it's deserved, but it is appreciated. Thank you so very much.
Definitely deserved. And you know, I really appreciate you coming on because I'm learning that performing artists and artists in general are in a quandary and having many challenges because of the times we're in right now. I've seen that in some cases, people will like tweak their creative juices and come up with something. Now, you used to perform very, very regularly. Are the restrictions because of COVID, did they make it very difficult for you? You know, how do you manage?
Well, at this point, the difficulty remains. We have chosen not to go online to perform because it changes, I believe, your ability to command the compensation that you're used to. Fortunately, I'm in a position that I can take a little time off and wait on things to open up again so we can get back to what we are used to do. That's where we are right now. Fortunately, I'm in a position that I can hold on just a little bit longer. There are many musicians, however, that cannot do that. And my support for them is of the utmost because I understand the challenges of this business.
And I think also I'm just sort of surmising that I imagine that with the kind of music that you play, that you played and that you sang was so popular that there were certain things you could always sort of count on. That's what I've sort of noticed about, you know, freelance musicians is that dates that are kind of booked annually, you know, and then there's everything else in between. So not being able to gather, you know, have people gather must be very frustrating. You used to sing with the Persuasions. That's quite a feather in the cap, isn't it?
It is a feather that I'm still wearing.
Yes, you are.
I still do perform with the Persuasions. I'm singing bass for them.
Your voice is very bass, and I don't know too much about what you do, but I know that people that have voices like you are a rarity and also like a blessing, you know, in any kind of singing group.
It is a blessing. And bass singers are fully aware of this, that we are in the minority. Most men are second tenors, and you'll find baritone. Most women are second sopranos, and you may find some altos. So I'm in a very unusual position that I fit a mold that most men cannot even think about fitting, you know, for me. And I'm blessed because I sing bass, but I also have a range to a second tenor.
Really? You're kidding me. No way.
Yes. Way. Very unusual.
So that is quite a range.
It is a range. I'm blessed. I don't brag. I simply say gratitude for the gift of voice that I've been given. It is what it is.
Well, gratitude goes a long way. I've learned that, and I learn it every day. So, LA, how did you get into the music field? Because I understand that you have your background is very diverse. I know that you studied politics, philosophy, and economics.
Absolutely, yeah.
But, yes, you did, which I think is fantastic. But the other thing is that you went to the Soul Funk University of Love.
There you go.
Tell me about that.
I'm a product of growing up in the 60s. Uh-huh. You know? So that little verse that you just repeated, it's very close, if not what you see on my website or Facebook page. I'm a product of the 60s.
Yeah.
All the politics that we lived through. And, of course, the music. And it's very seldom separated. Music and politics, they feed off of one another.
Yeah. It seems like our music is the soundtrack to our lives.
It actually is.
Yeah, you know, when somebody's like some icon will pass away and all of a sudden you'll have their songs in your head and you realize that it's all part of your collective subconscious.
That's exactly what it is.
There I go, waxing psychological.
Well, you nailed it. You nailed it because music is a reflection of our lives. Just like writing and poetry are a reflection of our lives. Music of the 60s, if it had not been for Vietnam, it would not have been a Marvin Gaye, what's going on.
Wow.
If they had not been the Vietnam demonstrations and all the ism of the 60s, it would not have been a Curtis Mayfield singing all the songs of protest. So music is a reflection as to how we live, how we feel at that current time. And for me, being a person of age, I don't want to say old.
Please don't say
a person of age. I'm looking good though, but I'm a person of age.
Yes, you are.
Thank you. These memories that we have of pages in our life in yesteryear, those persons that lived through it want to revisit those very same pages.
Mm.
When that happens, they come to see people like me, people of the 60s, that bring back the music of the 60s. Because this is what they remember, and this is what they experience, and they especially love songs. They know exactly who they was in love with, and might be the current, you know, husband, current wife, current girlfriend, so on and so forth. But they remember. They remember how it used to be, and they enjoy those feelings, and they want to relive those moments as many times as they can. I love music for that reason.
Well, you know, I think that's beautiful, you know, the way you state it. I think that you're right about that. It is something that you think about a person or you hear a song on the radio and it'll immediately conjure up someone that you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and feelings with that. I think that's why art is so important in general.
Absolutely.
Music is so important. All art is so important because of that intention, I would say, to conjure feelings in another.
Absolutely correct. Absolutely correct. Because everyday living can be mundane if you have a repetitive routine that you must follow in order to maintain a living, so on and so forth. So to have that interrupted for a moment, it may just be for a moment, of memories that were sweet to you, that make your heart swell, that may even tear up your eyes. Those things, music, poetry, dance, all of these things can do. I think you had asked me, so when did I get in or how did I get into this business of show business?
Yeah, how did you get into it? Because you seem very deep, as a deep thinker in general, so I'm curious about that.
Well, I try, but the beginning of my love for show business started when I was a wee young boy, they say. I might have been like 5, 6, 7 years old when I used to watch Shindig. And then later, American Bandstand. And you used to see these people dancing and singing, and the couples doing the hop and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. It demanded that I watch more. And I used to love to hear the applause. I remember actually pretending that I was some of these superstars back in the day.
Wow. But that's sort of like you projecting your own future. That's wonderful.
I was really blessed that I was able to do that. Kind of embarrassed as to how I did that as a kid. I remember taking a broom and sticking it between the two pillows in the couch. And that was my microphone.
Wow, that's cute.
And of course, it's totally ridiculous. It's really childish, but I was a child. And this is, for a moment in my moments of imagination, I was James Brown, 1965. I was I was Dan Cook.
I think your broom in the pillows was very, very clever. Very clever.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. I do appreciate that.
So it seems like you've actually lived some things, you know. I just like sort of knew a few things about you. And I think it's important for people that really are in the arts to understand that artists are really quite diverse, because I was very pleasantly surprised about your background in economics and everything.
It is a strange combination.
Well, as you discuss music historically, especially in the 60s, it now it makes sense to me that you would be into something like that.
But actually, you made a very good point. Yes. Hearing it from you, it does not seem as foreign as it could have sounded prior to knowing that I'm a product of the 60s. So if you're a product of the 60s, it's more likely that you will have a political connection to something, because civil rights in Vietnam and all the challenges of the 60s that are continuing today, more so. That is who we are. That's who we were. Some of us dealt with it in certain ways. Unfortunately, some of them were not the best of ways. Drugs became a major part of dealing with the failures of society in the 60s. You know, those kind of challenges continue even today.
I think you speak the truth on that one. You know, if there's any takeaway from this interview, I would say the fact that you were able to explain why artists are diverse just is actually illustrated in your background. If someone looked at you on paper, as they say, I think it's very interesting. And, you know, I think that given that we do have an economic downturn, challenging for artists to come up with a way to sort of resurrect what is their livelihood.
It's really difficult. And I'm so happy to know that artists have embraced the internet in order to at least try to manufacture some money opportunity. That's a wonderful thing, because sometimes necessity born opportunity. So the internet, very important to this industry right now. Broadway is still closed, and it will continue to be closed. And the theater in 2021. And that is a judgment that we can use for the entire country. Things would not be open as they were to 2021, maybe the summer.
Do you feel that there's like there's going to be, I don't want to say that the same term everybody's saying. Do you think there's going to be a different protocol, I'll use the word, to how you actually present yourself as a performing artist, you know, given the circumstances? I would never suggest that someone should dilute their value in any way. Do you anticipate like a different protocol for performing artists in order to just get the word out? I've been seeing some interesting things on TV. Artists that have the wherewithal, because they're like artists that have the money to make something like that happen. When I saw this one thing, I said, wow, I could see LA doing this.
Thank you for the lookout. In terms of protocol, my organization that I work for, Shadows of the 60s, tribute to Motown, specifically the Temptations, we accepted a challenge, a gig that was actually canceled in 2000 until 2021. They were able to change the location and how they would sell tickets and so on and so forth. And instead of it being in a theater, which is most of our work in theaters, you know, because it has a higher seating capacity, what they actually came up with a pretty good idea, I thought, to have it outside in an arena. Instead of selling seats, they sold spaces that were 10 feet apart from one another.
Oh.
Yes. So it took up the entire football field to do so. Normally, you would only take up a quarter of the football field for those same numbers. But that was a fantastic idea. And we thought about it. We questioned everybody's opinion about it. And we decided to do it.
How was it? How was it for you as the performer?
Well, it's different, because we're used to seeing shoulder to shoulder in front of the stage. And now people spread out more so. So it loses a little of its power. But we accepted that and knew that to be, you know, the case, because we were able to look out. Say, when you're on the stage and the lights are hitting, you can only see four or five, you know, rows of people anyway. You cannot see the people in the back. But we had the opportunity, peeping out of the curtains before showtime, to see the amount of people. And it warmed our hearts to know that people really want to continue loving us as they thing that did change is this. And for us, it's very important. I'll speak for myself. I love the exchange with people. I love the interaction with people. And the ability to shake hands without a discussion, what they're going to happen. There was no paparazzi in the green room. We didn't allow anybody in the green room. It was just a sterile environment. We even wore gloves, which is probably going to be a part of the uniform now, believe it or not. But we wore white gloves. We did all the things possible, even in terms of microphones. Where in the past you wouldn't have any problem sharing microphones. We didn't do that. We actually were assigned a microphone for the night and had to figure out a way to get back to that microphone to speak for and sing.
So they were taking very, very strict precautions.
Absolutely. And when we read what the protocols that were introduced to us would be, we accepted it. And it was a grand time, but that was the only time we performed this year, because most of our performances are scheduled to be inside the theater. So it was good to see everybody again, because we hadn't seen our co-performance in months and months and months, and we're used to seeing everybody every weekend.
I know, it's hard to believe how many months it's been. I think everybody's experience is different, is unique, I'll say. And I can say I have a few takeaways from this so far, because apparently we're not out of it yet.
No, we're not.
I think that you make a good point about being able to use the internet and having the internet available to us.
It has changed everything.
You know, you can have a party if you want. If you can't see somebody, you can have a party with them or do a WhatsApp with them.
Absolutely.
Israel, like WhatsApp with her, do something else with my other friend in South Carolina, like Skype. I'll do Skype. You want to do Zoom? I'll do Zoom. You know, I just want to see your face.
This is how we stay connected. We need to see eyes and smiles. Those are the points on the body that communicate most of the message.
Yes.
Of course, our eyes say so much. You can have a conversation with someone and not even have a word. Just your eyes speak. And so we need to, if you are connected with people, be able to visit those person's eyes and their mouth, their lips, and their speaking. It's very important to the whole world of being connected. Very important. This is why I don't understand these kids. They spend so much time texting. You know? I'm saying, well, you lose a lot of a message when you're texting constantly.
And you send so fast, and God forbid you make a mistake. I could tell
you.
I'm telling you. I can tell you. And send it too fast.
Please.
You know, oh my gosh. It's true.
And it happens, and it happens more than you would think. What I find kind of not, I think it's a missed opportunity by the younger generation, because they actually text more than they use the phone to call, which I found very interesting.
Yeah, well, it's kind of what they grew up with.
Yeah. This generation, they don't know anything about the old black phones on the wall. I still can remember my telephone number in the house in the 60s. I still remember it. I have a problem remembering my number now, because I've never had to recall it. I just push a button and everything happens. Things change.
But do you remember your number when you were a kid, though, right?
Oh, yes.
Isn't that weird how that works?
I can tell you what it is, because I'm quite sure back then you were using the exchanges. That's the way you lived. That was how your number was assigned.
Well, you know, that was the technology back then.
Right.
Okay, right. People, that was technology. I'm not making fun of anything. I'm just saying that, you know, times, they change. That's the way it goes, you know?
It is what it is. I remember, actually, while I'm really dating myself, I'm from the Caribbean.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, I'm from the Caribbean, from Trinidad, Tobago. And whenever cousins or aunties or uncles need to communicate back then, you wouldn't just pick up your phone and dial a number and be connected. What you had to do is call the operator and ask to be connected to a number long distance, and then they will call you back with a certain ring on the phone to let you know you have an available line. You sat by the phone. Sometimes it took 2 minutes, 5 minutes, sometimes 15 minutes. If it was a storm out, It may take an hour or it may not happen at all.
That is really something to remember. You know, it makes you realize how lucky you are now. We are now.
Absolutely. And you have to scream. I mean, because the static was just unbelievable. And you stayed on the phone 2-3 minutes because of the expense. How are you? Fine, thank you. Everybody good? Everybody good? Fine, good, good. Thank you. See you next time.
Yeah, right. It was quick. So let me digress a little bit and ask you a question about like some of the performances. I know that you performed in numerous theaters with the Temptations tribute band and also put with the Persuasions. I'm wondering, do you have like if there's anywhere like on video that someone could see something?
Oh, absolutely. You can actually go to the website, but the website is www.shadowsofthe60s.com.
Okay, www.shadowsofthe60s.com.
And there you will see video and posts about the Four Tops, Supremes, or the Ladies of Motown, and then, of course, the Tempting Temptation. There's all kinds of clips and YouTube videos that easily found. And then, of course, you can go straight to YouTube and check out all the videos. There are literally dozens and dozens and dozens.
And I can imagine that at some point you'll actually make an announcement through that platform when things really open up and you can start doing things, you know, and performing. And yeah, I think people like, I'm seeing people do like to see the performances that are on video.
We are already booked, actually, for 2021.
Yay.
Most of the jobs that were canceled for 2020 have been rescheduled in anticipation of it being open. So we're hoping and praying that there'll be some sort of resolve with right. this pandemic for next spring.
Mm-hmm.
That's when we should be hitting the road again. We're hoping and praying. Now, of course, it's all dependent on the numbers and how those towns that we travel to are dealing with those numbers. Sometimes we work in very obscure locations. How did you find these gigs? I don't know, but they found these gigs in towns with, when we're there, businesses shut down because everybody's at the concert. Everybody's at the concert. I mean, it's nothing. I remember once we did a show in the very tip of New York, right across from the St. Lawrence River. You can actually see Canada. And it was so cold. And it was snow on the ground. And we were there in the fall, and it was snow on the ground. And we did the show, but realized that there was nothing open on the way to the theater by limo. There was nobody in the street. So we all questioned, you know, where is everybody? You know, all the shops are closed. They said, well, sir, they're at the theater waiting for you guys. and we had to laugh. We had to laugh because the entire town just closes down. It's not like New York where, you know, nothing changes, you know. Life goes on, you know, in New York, in big cities, when it's a major event, life goes on. But
that's
in the
true.
Smaller towns, mm-hmm. there's a challenge, you know. And we are thrilled that they decided to close down because, in their mind, nobody's come to shop anyway because they're in the theater.
Well, you know something, that's like that really says something to you, you know, about your popularity. You know, I think that at this point, people are like really hungry for it. I know I'm hungry for theater.
Oh my goodness, yeah. I am so hungry myself. I'm motivated by being able to hit that stage and perform for people. And one of the things, along with the money, of course, one of the things that's so gratifying is to see the faces in the body language. Again, there's that conversation about eyes and mouth. When you hear people singing a song with us and the eyes are in perfect dance with what you are doing, I enjoy that. It takes us back. I enjoy the connection that people have with us. And I don't want to give that up. That's why I am so anxious to get back to work when it is the proper time.
I think that, you know, if everybody gets a positive mindset and does the right thing, things will work out. I mean, at this point, I just wanted like kind of not say too much more about that. I hope that people do the right thing and then we can come come back to some semblance of, I don't want to say normalcy, but satisfaction, well, I'll use, you know, instead of normalcy.
Well, normalcy is a good word because... Yeah.
And satisfaction, and Jim says, and civility.
Right. And unfortunately, I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon, because where our politics, where we are right now with our politics, they're barely challenging our ability to solve problems. And that is the saddest thing about what's going on here, the inability to solve problems, because people have opinions, not facts, but opinions about how it should be done, or even if it should be done. And for that reason, we're stuck with an arena of disaster. That's the best word I can find. It's an arena of disaster. No matter where you find, walk around the arena, it's disaster. So Wendy is the key to open up those doors, to let those people out of the arena, to change how we look at things, how we solve problems. I do believe things will get better, but it's not today. It is not today.
Well, and I'm like perpetually optimistic. It's just the way I am. But I'm not dreaming. I'm rational. I just say, you know, but, you know, I have hope for the human race.
Tony, I tell you something. I have a struggle with the two sides of my brain. I'm like Mr. Spock. I rationalize everything. At the same time, it's the side of artistic challenges that I'm constantly wanting to perform, create, and so on and so forth. And sometimes it is very hard to put those two stories together. It's very hard, you know. Fortunately, I hope that I have found a balance that I can do both. Can you imagine a person who is extremely logical with everything and not having any connection with any kind of art or expression, how his life or her life would be? Like Mr. Spock. Spock, half human and half Vulcan, was a lonely man.
Yeah. Well, he saw things the way they really are. That's what I say about that, you know?
And then you have those who are not logical at all and don't, they respond to everything in life as to how they feel. And that really does not work out well.
I think that throughout all of this, you know, and I know it as a creative person, that I just know that there has been a change. I want to believe that the change is for the better. And that's why I have hope for the human race, because if I feel if I'm a human being and I can change for the better, you know, I think anybody can change for the better.
Well, you know, sometimes, I agree, with challenges, how we find ourselves and resolve about challenges can allow us to grow and to learn and grow and do better, as you were just saying. So if you look back in history, just in the last 40, 50 years, when you had challenges in our country about certain things, what came out of that was a response to how we dealt with the civil rights movement, for the possibility of people of color being more involved in the economic process in the country. But it was not given, it was demanded, and eventually those persons in power decided to at least meet us in some way, halfway. It would not have been given if you sent a letter. It wasn't going to happen. So, and then of course, technology, you know, the space shot, the first capsule in space, born the internet. From that came a completely different way of advertising what you do, how you sell, what you sell, and expressing yourself on a regular. That was born out of a historical situation that had taken place.
Exactly. People don't think this way, but yeah, that's exactly true. And the thing that's I'd say that, you know, can give us, I guess, hope and or fear is the fact that technology grows so fast that it can go any which way, you know.
And it's growing faster and faster each cycle, each 10 years.
It's the underbelly of all of us right now. I hate to say it. Well, I said it.
Well, you said it, and I'm going to agree, because there was a time that if I forgot my phone at home, now there's just no way I'm walking away from my phone. I have gotten into my car.
It feels like your house burned down, right? You can't find your phone. I know. I'm on the fence on that one. I'm guilty of the same thing, but, you know, I'm trying to cure myself of dependency.
sometimes I had to disconnect. I just disconnect just to give myself solace for a moment, just to regroup, disconnect from all the opinions and the conversations, look at things that are going on, and just disconnect and not say or do anything. I need to rebuild who I am. Because it's constantly challenged with all the media that we have today. It's that constant reminder, you know, of your anger or your joy, depending on where you are.
That's why there's, I'll say, and, you know, in closing, I'll say that that's why there's such value in this pause that we're all going through. And, you know, another young woman I was talking to recently said that, and yeah, it's a pause. And, you know, something, and, you know, take a deep breath, enjoy the pause.
You know what? You're so right. I've learned to do fantastic things out while this pause. I've learned how to really clean my house, and I've learned how to live on less money.
Yes, that's true. And on that note, I'm definitely going to close, you know, for our prospective sponsors here so they understand where we're coming from. And thank you so much, LA, for coming on the show. You know, it was really lovely to talk to you, and I'm sure the audience is going to be very inspired by your insight into what you do, and I believe you'll be blessed for it.
Tony, thank you so very much.
My pleasure. And I'll say goodnight to the audience. Thank you for coming and listening to the Energy Stoners Cafe. And then I know that there'll be another time very soon when I'll have another excellent guest for you to listen to. And for now, I'll just say bye-bye. Thank you for listening to the Energy Stoners Cafe.